Accession number 10420, Reel 8.
Colonel W.I. Watson, Reel 8. Can you tell me what happened next, Colonel, please?
Yes. Round about the 11th of February, as I think I've mentioned perhaps, the 65th Anti-Tank Regiment, the old Norfolk Yeomanry, came to arrive at Conney Station, where they were to assemble. They were, although divisional anti-tank regiment, some people considered them corps troops, and they had come much later, at a later date, than the division itself. The officers looked a thoroughly yeomanry stamp in the oddest assortment of clothes, and I remember one chap wearing corduroy long trousers, I must say the men didn't look up to much. After this, I went to see the rear party of the 44th Green Hards at 10 years. The battalion itself had gone forward. Of course, it was halfway to its assembly area, and to see whether they were experiencing any difficulties, as had the 4th East Yorks, and whether they were having any trouble. But happily, the case was completely different. There was a chap there called Captain Vincent, who I knew in peacetime, appeared to be the squire of the village, and on thoroughly good terms with everybody. Now, Vincent was an extraordinarily nice chap indeed, and he was the town and country planning officer of the North Riding County Council. And I often wonder what happened to him. I did see him after the war once, but he'd long since finished being a town and country planning officer. But he was really a first-class a chap in the Green Hearts. And a very happy relationship also existed with the rear party of the 5th Green Hards at Rouen. Well, that shows you that they weren't all. It was probably the young officers who got trouble with a difficult mayor at the other place, and that was in the case of the 50s.
And the lack of experience.
But of course, Vincent would be really well experienced in dealing with civilians in view of what the position he held in the county council. Well, then that day, and it was the only day in the whole of this long period, that the general and Banks arrived about lunchtime, just as the first convoy was received their orders to move ahead. The general was in an extremely good fettle, especially after the news that there was to be a move. And they both left happily, I'm glad to say, at 1:45. And I set the ball rolling for the move once more. But the happy expectancy didn't last long, for shortly after the general leaves, the sub-area rang up to say there was to be no movement for this division once more. And I informed them that there appears to be no reason why we couldn't move up one stage further, and that I do not propose to countermand the orders about to move. I was informed that GHQ agreed. The general rang up to say later that he had heard the move was off, but I informed him of the approval I had obtained, to which he certainly agreed and was highly delighted. However, at 7:30 that night, instructions came through again that there was to be no movement. And when the general rang up, as he usually did in the evening, I informed him, and he agreed that no action should be taken until he's spoken to GHQ. Later he rings up to say that no movement is definite. A very busy day it was, too.
Me. So you didn't get anyone away?
No. Nobody. They all were preparing to go, but nobody got away. I went in the next morning, that would be the 12th of February, into Le Mans, where I'd never been before, to see the sub-area of the lines of communication. And it was turning very cold, and it was trying to snow, and I met a man called Major Green at the sub-area, who in peacetime was a schoolmaster at Sherburn. And I lunched at Gruber's, which was a well-known French restaurant in Le Mans, and with Percival and Mac, and the place was full of British and French soldiers. An obvious bevy of Gardies was sitting in the restaurant in the corner. And on the way back, I called at the 65th Anti-Tank Regiment, the Norfolk Yeomanry, to answer some of their conundrums and give them a helping hand. They are being nursed by the LFC, although they were divisional troops, but they thought they were corps troops, and therefore the LFC were nursing them.
Were other units and divisions having the same problems as yourselves at this time?
Yes.
It wasn't just unique to 50th Division.
Other units would be further up. Of course, there were some units in the front. There was a gap, you see, between the Maginot Line and the sea. Of course, there was the French thought there was no need to have a Maginot Line along the Belgian frontier. And many of the units were building, trying to extend the Maginot Line as far as possible, French and British.
Which you would join when you get there.
We were going to do when we get there. Incidentally, we never did get there. It was all changed when we went to Amiens. On the 12th of February, again, when the general rang up, he said he may move in the course of the next few days, and it may not be for a week or more, in which case we should not be going to our forward area after all. He warned me of that. There was obviously something in the air, and this was the beginning of it. There seemed to be a new plan being prepared.
He didn't say why the plan had been changed.
No. I did get to know very shortly afterwards. It because the general, insisted that we weren't going to dig defensive positions. He wanted us to train. And so we were going to an area where we could do a certain amount of training. And where we did.
Because you're still relatively inexperienced as a motorized division.
Well, still, yes. But it didn't matter because we lost the fourth and some through the years, who were, I think, destined to go to Finland or whatever it was supposed to be going to Finland. And we lost all our transport, our motor lorries that would have carried the units about. Well, then we get to the 13th of February. I received a very great blow from GHQ, which was to the effect, Post Major J.M. Grant, DAQMG, 50th Division to the 2nd Sea Force. On arrival of DAQMG in relief. Well, Murray Grant was going to leave the division. Well, I think, I'm not sure, he's now passed on. I'm not sure whether he just couldn't stand Banks any longer and hadn't worked it himself. Although he was very, very sorry to leave the division, because he'd have rather gone to a staff job rather than back to his old regiment. And of course he was taken prisoner at St. Valery. And that was that. I still have a Christmas card every year from his widow. We still keep in touch, although I've not seen her since the Burford days. Yes, you see, I got a note here on the 13th of February. Looks like a complete change. In the office all day, except for a breather, after the GOC rings up. He informed me he's trying to get permission for the division to move to a training area.
So this would entail you in new movement orders?
Yes, it would. But it didn't entail them all that much, because the area was en route, and it really meant cutting out one staging area. That's about all. Well, then there was this time of the day, there were frightful wintry showers, and the snow nearly every morning, but not so bad in the afternoon. I went on the 14th of February to the 74th Field Regiment to see what they were doing, and I was only there for a short time just to explain that they were to leave the division temporarily in the place of the 92nd. But knowing what temporary means sometimes in war, it might mean permanent. They seemed to be awfully pleased to see me. And then I passed on to the 4th Royal Northumberland Fusiliers for lunch. They too seemed to be happy. The CO Wood was the CO. I was brother of George Wood, who was in the 6th Battalion. And so I went on. Whenever I could, I used to go and try and see that everybody was happy.
And most of them were obviously settling in well.
Most were settling in, biding their time. I was still feeding at the Hotel de Commerce with the French, some French officers, and a few of the 44th Division. There were four French officers. We took the food as it came. There was no variation, much to the disgust of the four French officers. They were highly incensed. There were 101 names of representing chipped potatoes, but to taste, they were all exactly the same. And the meat never varied between roast or braised, with sometimes poulet thrown in as a variation. But as I put here, two things are outstandingly good: omelettes and French beans in butter. And that's what we always asked for. It was a very busy day now, on the 15th of February. Our new area to which we are definitely going is both exclusive, Picuni, and Picuginy, and Iaiolly, inclusive, and Ver Sur Cell to Prusel, all inclusive, and Belleuse, Belleni, Morion Vidam, all northwest of Amiens. And that was the new area. Do you know?
I've not been there, but I think I know it from the map.
From the map. Apparently the general had got his way and were not going to be used as general fatigue men and do nothing but digging around Lille. The third halt at Bretagne in en route in the former move was dropped. Everybody was most anxious to get into this area, the GHQ rang up to tell me on this particular day that the move must start on the 17th of February. Well, this was the 16th of February, so it was a ridiculous idea to try and get it to start the following the next day. A message came, the fact that this was stupid, came from the divisional headquarters, and that the general has gone to GHQ to settle the thing himself. And the move is on the 18th, and gives the route now, Evre, which is on the way, via Gisors and Gournay, and Marseille and Poix. And it tells me to make my own arrangements about moving the 60th anti-tank regiment, the Norfolk Yeomanry. He's most anxious, the general said, to get us all in three more flights instead of four, so that the anti-tanks must come on the last day with whatever convoy was moving.
And was it your instructions that actually got them started? They would have to wait for an instruction
from you to move on? Every unit couldn't move without my instructions, you see. But the general then told me that I had to move the anti-tank regiment with the last convoy and make arrangements for it joining in. Well, I got the impression that the general... I got the impression that the GHQ, not our general, the GHQ was frightened that the French would put in Operation Thaw precautions again, as they're always set on foot after a frost, as the roads don't possess any foundations. They'd go and sprag the move once more. And the general, when he rang up that night, said the GHQ hadn't got a grip on the situation. The general obviously had been harassing people, officials at GHQ. By the 17th of February, the activity starts in the usual theme with a message from advanced divisional headquarters that the move was cancelled on account of snow.
So you're back to where you started.
So we were back on the 17th to where we were started. And then I got a message from Siberia that this was all quite untrue. And when asked if it was I asked if it was definite, and I informed the units and the general, and who then stated himself that the original message should never have been sent, because it was never intended for 50th Division. It was merely meant for corps troops. And so it's just a typical example which showed how careful one must be in sending out orders. The roads were all clear of snow.
Can I just come in here, because there's obviously a great deal of to-ing and fro-ing of messages. These were done all by telephone up the line.
Yeah, telephone, yes.
And was the French telephone system up to it?
Yeah. Well, more or less, yes. Oh, yes, I think it was, yes.
You had no problem with...
We didn't have any problems. I never had any problems, as I can remember. But it was... what I do want to impress upon you and anybody else who listens to this talk is what a frightfully difficult situation it was, with the division all strung out and these messages and counter messages and no general except when he rang me up every evening, which he duly did. It was terribly difficult. Well, then, on the 18th of February, the fourth convoy left for the first stage, consisting of the 238 field company and the 150 field ambulance and 74th field regiment, and they reported their safe arrival. The third convoy reported its safe arrival at Ivre. They'd set off. The wheels of movement are actually turning, were actually turning once more. And then I have a note here. The French officers have been greatly perturbed about the way we've been treated by the hotel proprietor, the Hotel Commerce. And due to them, they asked us all to transfer their patronage, and they are lodging a complaint to the mayor. The food has been of poor, considering the reputation of the French, but not too bad for army standards, so far as we're concerned. But the service has been poor. There being merely a frightened woman, daughter-in-law, to wait on some 30 officers. The landlord, too, is mean, and to get in help from, but charges the usual 10% for services, despite the poor service that it was. And then that particular night of the 18th, Mac and I and Bedford of the DAAG of the 44th Division, who were still with us, and Stuart of G3 of the same division, have been asked by four French officers to a special dinner, which they are giving to us. Aperitifs at 7:45 in the French mission. Another fall of snow. What a party last night I've got. Started at 8:10 and we left at 11:30. But everything done was done in excellent taste. I remember it so well. It was awfully well done. And according to the very, very best French traditions. We started with an aperitif of white port and vermouth, cold soup, and there were hors d'oeuvres and Alsace white wine. Then sweetbreads and mushroom patties with Bordeaux wine, then mutton, French beans and legume with claret, followed by dessert and champagne. And that was one of the very best meals we had in this session. Added to this, there were gâteaux, which were part of the table decorations, and which were displayed many Union Jacks and tricolours.
Can I just come in again, Colonel? At this time you held the rank of?
Major.
Major. What was your salary as a major?
Oh dear me, I really can't. Yeah, guess. We had to have an account at not at our own banks, Barclays. We had it at, not Lloyd's, we had it at, what were the banks? The army banks. And we had to open an account and our pay was put in it.
And from that you had to meet
all, the
all your expenses.
Yes. I had very little expenses, only if I wanted to drink or anything like that. And I suppose I had to pay the hotel, the commerce, something. But normally, just as I would a mess bill. But I didn't pay my billet. That was the billeting officer would arrange for all that.
So you've got snow again.
We've got snow again. The move did continue as arranged. The 151 brigade moved to Mortain, and the 232 field company and the 74th field regiment moving safely into Ivre. the 150 Brigade got to its destination in the concentration area. This happy affair, however, didn't last long. And for the French put four precautions in the Somme department, and all movement by road was stopped once more. This was the 19th of February. So you got just a little dribble, and you got one brigade into its assembly area, which is now northwest of Amiens. I have a note here. It did seem to me, and it still does now to this day, what would have happened if war had been going on? I mean, it was quite incredible the French should stop all this move if a war had been going on.
And yes, it's running through my mind, and I was going to ask you, actually, what your opinion of it. You know, if the Germans had attacked at that time...
They couldn't have stopped us. And the roads would have deteriorated to such a extent to be almost impassable, probably. I remember I put it down here. What should happen in the case of war? Fortunately, there were now at the time serious activities going on, otherwise we should have never got anywhere. And what is the Finns, I noticed, would do it if the snow fell there? Would they stop all movement? Would you like to turn the light on?
And what happened next, Colonel?
Well, of course, this is the 19th of February. All move was stopped again. And I wondered what would have happened had there been a war and had there been fighting. It was, as we now know, the period of the phony war. But then what would have happened in Finland if the Finns had to stop fighting or stop all movement when snow fell? The roads in France would indeed have been cut to ribbons and would probably have been impassable. But that is a thing that one's got to accept in war. But anyhow, the move was stopped. This was on the 19th of February. The thaw came almost in 48 hours, and there was a considerable amount of flooding then. And we were told that the road between near Fresnes was extremely badly cut up,